back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively doing the Maryland Crab Cake this week. We will be at Gunpowder Lodge on Friday. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We'll have some Raven scratch-offs to give away, as well as our friends at Window Nation. I'm wearing my Window Nation gear here today, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. And our friends at Goodwill, where we're shopping, getting ready for Halloween and the great holiday, where I'm going to go as Aladdin Insane, I think, and do a little David Bowie turn. Ravens take on the Browns this week. Since I've been kicked out of the local media, I like reaching to people in Cleveland to talk all things Cleveland Browns. It's this is a very, very scary time for the Ravens, having lost these three games, these big leads, and the Browns come in as sort of, well, they're just the Browns, and I think the Browns are dangerous. Scott Petrick has covered all things Cleveland and Clevelandia Guardians, all the way back to the Indians, all the way back to the other Browns. He does a podcast now called Zone Coverage, but you can find all of his work at brownzone.com and, of course, add on Twitter for the Chronicle Telegram and the Medina Gazette in Elyria. What's going on, Scott? How's it been, man? A lot has changed since the last time we got together, certainly for your quarterback situation as it pertains to the finances of our quarterback situation.
That's true. Yeah, it's going all right. A little bit like you guys, I think, with the blown leads in the fourth quarter, feels like the Browns should be better than 2-4, but they're not. And you're looking at a three-game losing streak that really has everybody questioning everything, you know? So it's a tough spot for them.
For them, I see them as a team that had very capable players around Baker Mayfield. They were building in that direction. They jettison him. They bring in the other kid, the suspension. It's so Haslam-y, right? It's so Brownsy that all of this dust around this kid that they brought in, and there's really nothing to show other than this absurd contract that's waiting for him. I can't imagine how this is going to go, you know, like once he's back. It doesn't matter for this week, but just the big picture of the investment that Steve Bisciotti's not willing to make in Lamar Jackson that Jimmy Haslam was willing to make in this kid.
Yeah, I think you bring up some good points. We don't know how it's going to play out. You know, they're assuming that he's going to be a top, whatever, 5, 8, 10 quarterback, and that it's going to change everything. And that might happen, but who knows? You know, I mean, we had another civil lawsuit filed last week. You know, probably won't be the end of those. I think it puts the organization in a bad light, and it has since they started discussing it in March, or it became public in March. Now, you know, I don't think Baker Mayfield is the right guy, so I understand wanting to move on from him. But it feels like there had to be a better option than Deshaun Watson. And, you know, it just puts a cloud over everything, number one. It hurts their salary cap situation. It hurts their draft pick situation. Now, if he turns out to be the guy he was in Houston and, you know, I guess rehabilitates his image, then maybe it looks like a genius move. But now it's hard to envision that.
What is Jacoby Brissett at this point? What are the Browns at this point? What are we going to see on Sunday at 1 o'clock when they come in here?
Yeah, Jacoby Brissett played really well for the first about 4 weeks and three quarters. And then the last five quarters, it hasn't been nearly as good. And it started with a pick into the end zone with just under 3 minutes left in that Chargers game, where if they kick a field goal, they go ahead. Instead, and he probably could have run for a touchdown. Instead, he pulls up and he throws a pick. They wind up losing. Now, it's not just him. They had a chance to win the game on a field goal, and the kid missed a field goal. But he's had more turnovers than you'd expect, right? His reputation, game manager, doesn't turn it over. He's got five interceptions now, lost fumble last week. Three of the first three interceptions all came in the last 3 minutes. A couple of them were kind of hurry up. But, you know, I mean, he's a backup quarterback with – some good qualities. Like, he's a likable guy. He's a good leader. You just can't trust him to go out and win a game for you. And I think that was an issue against New England because they took away the run. The Browns tried to pass. He throws a bad pick early. So it's like you would think. You're trying to play with a backup quarterback for 11 weeks. It's tough to do.
Well, we've had very few thrills here as Ravens fans, but one of my thrills this year was watching Joe Flacco sort of celebrate at the end. That was the most unlikely loss, right? Like, I mean, as all the losses the Ravens have had, these three, the awful giveaways, I would still say the Jets were, less likely to win at the 2-minute warning than any of the rest of these teams were.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, I think we look at the season a whole lot differently if they win that game. You know, they probably keep momentum. You don't question some of the defensive players or defensive strategy. And if Nick Chubb goes out of bounds at the one, the game's over. And instead, he scores. They're up 13, extra point missed, blown coverage, onside kick, don't recover, bad defense. And then Jacoby Brissett throws a pick with like 12 seconds left. So everything that went wrong. And any one of those things changes and they win the game. So, yeah, it's a horrible loss. And I think, you know, they won the next week, so you can't say everything went downhill from there. But it certainly put a damper on the beginning of the season, and they had a chance to start, whatever, 3-0, 4-0, 5-0.
Scott Patrick covers all things Clevelandia, Guardians, Cavaliers, and otherwise out in Elyria. You can find him. Zone Coverage is the podcast in Brown Zone. You can find him out on Twitter as well. It's P-E-T-R-A-K if you're not watching out online. Scott is one of our usual suspects around here. We try to get together at least twice a year at Browns. Who knows? Maybe Orioles Guardians will become something next year as well. You know, for the organization, and I would just say for selling tickets, you live in the community. All of us have mothers or sisters or daughters or cousins or women in our lives. I would think there were a lot of female Browns fans that looked at this thing. I mean, the Browns have done a lot of things right, wrong. Josh Gordon smoked some weed. They've had some bad quarterbacks. I mean, the owner's been a creep, and the flying pilot Jays, whatever they're called, that he's scamming people and fraud and all that. But this thing just – listen, man, I'm sideways with the Ravens right now after 26 years for awful stuff that they're doing. The Washington football team's got its own mess with Daniel Snyder. My baseball, these creepy kids are fighting with each other over their old man's money while he's dying for the baseball. I mean, there's bad ownership and there's weird stuff going on everywhere, but nothing quite takes the cake like going out into the open market and giving a criminal the highest contract in the history of the sport, and how that would relate to an already sort of abused fan base in Cleveland, right?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, that monopolized my offseason, you know, monopolized the offseason for the organization and for the city. Yeah, you know, it's weird you say, and it's common, right? Well, everybody's got a sister, a mom, a wife, whatever. It shouldn't matter. Like, you should be able to look at it. You don't have to have any women in your life and go, it's a bad thing, right? The accusations are incredibly serious, and he is not. He's been defiant to Deshaun Watson when discussing them. You know, settles the lawsuits, all but one of, or two of them now because of the new one. You know, offers an apology, but then says he still hasn't done anything wrong. And it divided the fan base. Certainly, you know, it's debts died down where I think the people that kind of gave up on the Browns just are no longer vocal about it, that they cut ties, and that's what they did. I think it's been a really tough situation. I think the Browns had no need. I mean, they needed a quarterback, so you can argue that they did need to do something, but you didn't have to go get this guy. And I know that three other teams were involved and wanted him, but the Browns went and got him, and they got him after he said no by giving him that contract. And that just takes everything to another level. And, you know, it feels like the Browns have really, you know, gone out of, defended him. And, you know, I get it because he's your guy.
Well, look, the Ravens sent Ray Rice out with his little phone to give a press conference to swear that he never did anything, only to have the videotape come out probably saw, should have saw, NFL security saw. Certainly Aaron Wilson's phone was ringing off the hook here in Baltimore from people up in New Jersey, you know, who saw it. And they let him out on the field. I mean, Kareem Hunt, we can just go through all of these these situations, not to mention what the owners are doing, right? That's a whole different thing, you know, on and off. But in Cleveland, I just think to myself that, you know, I've been there where they're trying to always gain the trust of the fan base and get people, I wouldn't say take you for granted. They've had too many empty seats there to take anybody for granted in Cleveland, I think. And they haven't won enough that this smack of desperation. This doesn't feel like good sense.
Yeah, it certainly does smack of desperation. I agree completely. And I think there's some arrogance to it. Like, hey, if we think we're going to win with this guy, and if we do, then everybody's going to come running back, which may or may not be true, but it ignores the reality that you alienate a certain, in my opinion, significant part of your fan base.
Yeah, you alienate people that are good humans.
Exactly. And then, you know, I don't know if you remember it was August 18th. He agrees to the settlement, the 11-game suspension settlement. He comes out and is defiant. And then Jimmy Haslam and D Haslam come out, and they were two terrible news conferences. It was ridiculous. Jimmy was defiant. Everybody deserves second chances. D says it's time to move on. Time to move on. He just agreed to it like 20 minutes earlier. I thought everyone came off looking terribly. Not Andrew Berry. Andrew Berry, the GM, did not come off looking terribly because he's a nice guy and respected and respectful. But I thought Deshaun Watson and the Haslams came off looking terrible, and that's just a continuation for the last 5 months.
Scott Patrick here talking all things. So on the field, what the Ravens are going to see in containing Lamar Jackson, so maybe by the end of the week, Bateman will be playing. I mean, Harbaugh was sort of winking at the media earlier in the week saying that he's coming back. This has been a real mess here, you know, defensively, Lamar making the tragic mistake. And part of this is you got your own quarterback thing going on there, controversy of the signed guy. We have the other thing going on where this kid's not signed, representing himself, plays in an unorthodox style. He's a different kind of player to sort of gauge. And the question here is whether he really wants to be here in the future, whether he wants to get a better tax shelter down in Florida with two franchises that need quarterbacks. So we have all of that going on, but we thought we would have that going on in a year where this feels like a Super Bowl contender. I don't know that the Ravens at 3-3, we can talk about them in that light, and they have to go play Tom Brady 4 days after they play the Browns this week. So this is a really treacherous little stretch for them to be going into where they're not playing well, they're getting healthier, and they're losing football games. I mean, loss to the Browns could put them in last place.
Yeah, it's certainly a pivotal spot for both teams, right? I mean, the Browns have the Bengals on Monday night, Halloween after the Ravens. If they somehow manage to go 2-0, they're at the top of the division. If they lose both of them, you know, they're probably not playing meaningful games when Deshaun Watson comes back in December. And I think there's some parallels between Baltimore and Cleveland, just how the season started. The Browns were leading going into the fourth quarter in their first five games and wound up only winning two of them. Baltimore's right, blown all those leads. So there's talent, right? If you're winning in the fourth quarter, you have some talent. I'm surprised that the Ravens have not been able to finish just because traditionally they win games and finish games, and the Browns don't have that history outside of, you know, a couple of years ago going to the playoffs. But it's interesting, you know, and the Browns are built on the run. And, you know, I haven't seen a ton of the Ravens. I've seen a decent amount. I watched the first half of that Giants game so far. And, like, they seem to be doing a lot of good things, yet they're losing games. I think that as a fan base is kind of hard to reconcile, right? You should be 5-0 or 6-0 or 5-1, whatever. And instead you're 3-3 and all these tough questions are hanging over you.
Well, watching the Ravens from afar in this Lamar Jackson thing, I know you've had your own quarterback issues there, but the guaranteed money part of that and what it's done to Lamar's, not just his value or where he would go, but what he's willing to accept. Because, you know, the Ravens were dangling 80, 90, 100 million out in front of him last year and saying, you didn't play the last six games, take the guaranteed money, jump into the cockpit, let's go run the team the next 5 years. And then this Watson thing happened. And it's completely reset everything about him and probably the spirit of the season for him and where the Ravens are, that it's definitely been all the oxygen here as to his contract, not just his play. Now, his play didn't even happen until 6 weeks ago. It was 8 months of Lamar's money, Lamar's money. Now, week after week, it's like a referendum on him. It's a whole different conversation than what they're having, win or lose, for Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes or any of these, even Kyler Murray, these signed quarterbacks, even Russell Wilson, who lost again the other night. They're not talking about his contract. They're talking about, can he play this week? We've not had – this has been a heavy thing for this kid, I think, here. More heavy than it needed to be.
Yeah, that's really fascinating, and I get it, right? I mean, it's a big deal. It's a lot of money. It's, you know, life-defining, life-changing, all that stuff. Not to mention how you compare with your peers, and I know that's a big deal, right? Do you want to be the highest-paid guy? I think it's interesting that the Ravens are drawing a hard line there. And I know – Denver did to some degree with the Russell Wilson contract. Because if you think he's your guy, is $230 million guaranteed the end of the world? I get if you're the owner, you don't want to do it. But, I mean, he's an MVP. He's a different guy, you know. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He's your guy. I don't know. I think I'd be tempted to pay him. I understand not wanting to and trying to negotiate. But I don't know if I would draw that line in the sand. And I get it. If you don't want to set a precedent, and I get the league doesn't want more guys getting guaranteed money like that, But if you drafted a guy, he turned out to be your guy. He's an MVP guy. I don't know. I would say he would play better
if he were signed. You know what I mean? Like, that's a flippant thing to say. He could play. I think he could play more relaxed if he was signed. And I think the organization that it just would be, it would have been better for all of them if he were signed. And I'm not saying it was right one way or another. Right. He should have taken less or they should have given him more. It just would be a better situation. It would to a more harmonious situation to win football games, because it's hard enough when you're throwing that pick. And I'm not saying that pick wouldn't have mattered one way or another, but it changes the temperature of everything when you're not signed.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Because then everybody views it as, well, that just comes with the deal, right? He's your franchise quarterback. There's no getting out of it. But now there's a, okay, it feels like you're evaluating everything every week. And the Browns had that a little bit with Baker Mayfield, right? Because he was coming up for that time where he was eligible for an extension and he hadn't gotten it yet. And it did. It felt like every week is a referendum. I think that's a good way to phrase it. And that does change everything about how you view it. And I think Denver's a great example. Russell Wilson's not getting benched, right? Nothing's going to happen to Russell Wilson. So as a fan base, I think you go, okay, well, let's accept it and let's figure out, let's just hope it gets better. But until you have that guaranteed that he's sticking around, you just look at everything different.
Man, always good to visit with you. I would talk some Guardians, but we're in that tender spot where they've been rained upon and they might be playing, they might not. I hope when you're listening to this that the Yankees are – that sound you hear in the distance is them hitting the golf ball. You know, from my I'm always an underdog guy. Scott, you know that. I root for all underdogs except for the Browns and the Bengals.
Appreciate that.
Hey, man. How's the golf game doing?
It's – you know what? It's good until the season starts. And then I get to play like once a week, and it's tough for me when I play once a week. But 2 weeks ago, I played, and I played Saturday, Tuesday, and I played great on Tuesday. Then I played a week later, I played like crap. So
this is a new thing for me. It's a new segment. I'm going to start with you, Scott. I've never done this before because I do have golf people on. My back's a little wonky. I can't even hit the ball. It's not my thing. It wasn't my sport. I was more of a tennis guy. I'm more of like a yoga guy or a little bit more. Like I'm into different stuff. So golf, I don't know that it'll ever be my game. Brian Billick, our partner here, is all 6'7" of him, made fun of golfers the first 65 years of his life. He moved out to Ohio and out to Minnesota. Now he's golfing like 5 days a week. So I can't say I would never golf, but every golfer that I have on, I just want to ask you, you've been doing it your whole life. You take it seriously, pictures, hats, you got all the gear. What's your greatest golf experiential memory? Is it playing or watching? But like, what do you love about golf at this point?
Yeah. I mean, I love everything about it. There's pretty much nothing I'd rather do than play golf. I like being outside. I like the competition. I like how it gets you to try to be better, right? Like it's never perfect. You're always striving to be better. I like the time spent with your buddies, all of it. But I've had a lot of great moments. I've been able to play cool places. I went with my uncle to Bandon Dunes in Oregon, right on the coast. And I don't know, we played 6 rounds in 4 days or something. It's unbelievable. So that golf.
Yeah, I've never even really heard of it, right? So you're,
yeah,
you know,
it's, I mean, it's like Pebble Beach, but in Oregon, it's unbelievable. You walk, you got caddies. So that was great. And then I got to play Kiowa where, you know, they had the PGA last year where Phil won. And I had a good round there. So those are the two that stick out right now.
Well, what a mess, the sports washing and the live and the Mick, you said Milton Mickelson, and I'm thinking World Cup's coming up in a couple of weeks. I mean, golf is in a completely different conversation now that's political, huh?
Dude, you know, I watch a lot of Golf Channel and, you know, we joke around in the beat, like when the Deshaun Watson thing happened, you're like, man, we just want to talk about football. And that's how the Golf Channel guys sound. They just want to talk about golf and they have the sports watching and they have all this stuff hanging over and they can't just focus on chip shots and putts because this live thing is just hang over everything.
But nobody's ever going to watch that, right? Like literally, that's part of the problem. It's the USFL. It's not like it's the XFL. They can talk about it, throw money at it. It's not really a thing.
It's only a thing if it winds up combining with the PGA at some point, with the PGA Tour. Like if it got big enough where the PGA Tour couldn't ignore it anymore. But yeah, now I don't think it's a thing. I haven't watched one shot of it, and part of that's a protest, but there's enough other good golf to watch. But it's fascinating, but it's a little, you know, I guess it's kind of like today's world where, I don't know, there's something's always bugging you, you know, like you always got to take a side on something.
throw enough money at it, you can stay out of jail like Daniel Snyder, right? You know, you just hang in there, you know what I mean? And that's part of what that whole message is. We have enough money to buy whatever we want. We'll buy Phil Mickelson, we'll buy his buddies, and we'll put on a little golf thing and stage something. I just, it's unfortunate for golf. You know, it's always unfortunate, I think, when, you know, that there's a fracture in that sort of wrecks it for the fans, whatever right?
I agree. I mean, I'm in some like golf league, and the guy's like, yeah, we might not do it anymore because there's so much uncertainty. Yeah. So yeah, I agree. I think it is unfortunate.
Well, I hope you get good weather out there in Ohio. Hit the ball. Sunday, he'll be covering all things Browns from the other perspective. He is Scott Petrick. You can find him at Zone Coverage. That's his podcast. And Brown Zone. And, of course, Adam Medina in Elyria, writing all things Clevelandia sports. Always good to visit with you. I'm sorry I'm not going to make it out to Tremont in a couple of weeks, but I might still come out for the breakfast. You never know.
Sounds good. Thanks, bud.
There he goes. Appreciate it. Scott Petrick, you can find him out on Twitter as well as at the Medina and Elyria and all the places. Chronicle Telegram, the Medina Gazette, brownzone.com, and of course at Zone Coverage out on the podcast. You can find me on Friday at Gunpowder Lodge. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill and Window Nation. You buy two, you get two free. 866-90-NATION, reminding you about that. Luke is in Owings Mills, covering all things Ravens all week long, getting you ready for Cleveland Browns football. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. The wise conversations continue at BaltimorePositive.com. Stay with us.